You're listening to Write the Book, the podcast for writers and curious readers, coming from Burlington, Vermont. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. Today on Write the Book, you'll hear an interview with the author C.D. Bell, whose new book, Ware Girl, is just out from Choose Co. The book was actually created by a team of writers who conceived of and plotted it together, inspired by the working tradition of television writers. Their backgrounds range from bookselling to interactive game design. They are also relaunching the Choose Your Own Adventure series, and Ware Girl is the first project to come out of that relaunch, though its ending is not chosen by the reader. C.D. Bell also publishes under the name Kathleen Davitt Bell. A couple of her other books include Slipping and I Remember You. When she's not biking the streets of Brooklyn, New York, you can find her writing in a decrepit RV, clinging to the side of a hill in upstate New York, trying to teach herself to watercolor or inventing her own recipes. She is a voracious reader of anything and everything fantasy, supernatural, or romance, and she swears that the monsters she often writes about are not real. At least, she hopes not. The second installment of the Ware Girl trilogy is in the works. Here's a little information about Ware Girl. Eager to escape her small hometown, high school junior Nessa Kurland is focused on winning a college scholarship for cross-country running. A chance encounter with a trapped wolf while out on a run leads to powerful and frightening changes, and one day Nessa is transformed into a full werewolf. Now she must navigate the challenges of high school while coming face-to-face with true human darkness as she tries to make peace with her wild new nature. When I spoke with C.D. Bell, whose name is Kathleen, I began by asking her how Ware Girl came into being.
That's a great question, because Ware Girl is not like any other book I've ever written. And the idea was not mine. It was a collaborative writing process, and mostly a collaborative plotting process.
Oh, interesting. The
Choose Co., which is the publisher of Ware Girl, is a small press in Vermont, and the five writers and editors who run it came up with the idea of Ware Girl as their first linear novel.
They right.
They are the publishers of the Choose Your Own Adventure series, which is beloved and well known by many. And so they wanted to publish a book that was not a choose your own adventure. And they came up with the five women who work there went away for a week together and spent a lot of time watching movies and talking about books they'd read and, you know, peeling away to do internet research and kind of came across this idea of a girl werewolf. And they created a very strong protagonist, a girl who's an athlete, who's a cross-country runner, who's trying her best to get a scholarship. She lives in a small town in northern Michigan, not the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, but sort of north central, and in a town that's kind of an economic disaster, and she's trying to, I think I sounded like Trump there for a minute. she's trying to get out, and she's doing as much training as she can, and she's getting very close to times that'll get her a scholarship, and to kind of put the last, you know, finishing touch on her training, she goes out running with a much faster, more ambitious, older member of the team who takes her into the woods at night, and while this girl Nessa is running, she gets bit by a wolf and slowly starts to realize that she is turning into a werewolf.
And so that's a great recap of the setup of the book, which was so interesting. So where did you come into it?
I came into it, Choose Co. Called me when they had about, it was a three-act outline, and they had Act 1 pretty well plotted out. They had a lot of elements of Act 2 plotted and sort of some hazy senses of what might happen in Act 3, and I joined them for a retreat in March, and we hashed out the rest together. And working with them on the hashing of it out was super fun. I mean, we sat. I think they felt kind of guilty. They kept saying like, oh, we wanted to like rent another house, but we just couldn't get it together. So, but for me, coming from Brooklyn, just spending a week in Waitsfield, Vermont was a total treat, even though it was March and everything was muddy and gross. And it was like, there was so much ice outside, you couldn't even take a walk. We walked like 50 feet once, but we sat in this conference room and it's really fun to do something like that when everyone clearly loves story and is coming, has all these different associations and different places. And to do that alone as a writer is it's great, but to do it with other people, it's sort of like, it was just a delightful process. And, you know, sometimes we didn't agree and we would hash it out, and it was a very respectful environment. And I felt like because of the sort of talking that we did, the writing was a breeze. First of all, I knew I wasn't really supposed to make too many changes in the plot, and that kind of liberated me. I didn't have to think, oh, would it be better if this isn't her boyfriend, or maybe the little brother shouldn't come in here? And I was like, no, that's the story. We wrote it this way. So I just kind of, you know, wove it all together in a way that made sense to me and got to focus on detail and mood and character and the things that I really love writing.
It's funny, as you describe this, it sounds to me like they haven't really quite let go of their choose-your-own-adventure nature because they're all kind of creating an adventure together.
Yes, it was. It's like a team adventure.
A team adventure.
And, you know, I grew up on those Choose Your Own Adventure books, and I remember reading them, and I remember, you know, at first you would read them naturally, you know, as choosing what you think is the best idea, and then you would read them to try to, you know, find other ways you could end, and then you would get to the point where you're just trying to make your character die as quickly as possible.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Let's see. That sounds like a lot of fun, and actually it sort of changes the way that I approach this interview, because a lot of my questions have to do with choices that you made as an author, but it sounds like there were a lot of different people thinking about what would make the best narrative here. So one question that I did have was if you could talk a little bit about taking a classic story and reimagining it for a contemporary reader, which I think is what this book really does well.
So you mean like the sort of classic Victorian werewolf story, or do you mean like the classic kind of archetypal shape-shifting, you know, folktale that
thinking more of the werewolf, and this actually really does deviate from that at certain points, and I don't want to give anything away, but
I think the women at Chusco, when they came up with this idea of taking a werewolf story and placing it on a you know, young woman in a high school setting, was that there was a lot of energy there. And I completely agreed. And it also seemed like the time was ripe, because I think I saw this as a sort of a play on a gendered story. Like, mm-hmm. I know that there are other stories about girls who are werewolves out there, but to me it felt like the classic werewolf story is not a particularly feminine one. In mm-hmm. fact, you know, for a girl going through puberty, ending up in high school with her new body that she's just barely gotten to, you know, recognize, and all these unwanted pimples and hair coming, you know, the
right.
werewolf story almost is like a nightmare. You know, like, it's like you and I remember thinking, like, how could you get a high school girl to feel empathy and feel like she doesn't want to just like put the book down and run for cover, because it's sort of so terrifying, the idea that you have hair bursting out all over you. And often in a male werewolf story, you know, there's a lot of exaggerated muscles and strength and kind of claw-like hands and the desire to, you know, like kill a fawn and I didn't think that, I don't identify with that story personally. Mm-hmm. And although I'm not an especially feminine woman, I do know that, you know, I've spent a lot of time with, you know, my sisters-in-law or my, you know, women friends, and I'm often finding them being like, oh, you know, can we please like not get that dirty? Or, you know, can we, you know, have time to shower? Yeah. I'm always like, oh, you know, who needs showering? Like, I sort of am always pushing my women friends to be a little bit more grungy and down to earth. But this was almost like a fun attempt to try to get into the heads of someone who might actually want to stay feminine and not to be like the most girly girl that ever existed, but to sort of find ways that a wolf can be super powerful, super strong, and yet also remain sleek and attractive from a self-imagining point of view. Yeah. Like I wanted girls to read this and feel like they could be a wolf and they could still be very strong and very beautiful, and that their strength and their beauty went hand in hand.
Okay. Now, one thing that occurs to me as you're saying all of this is that the girls' empowerment movement and girls' running movement are both really big right now. And Nessa, your main character, is a runner. Was that at all in anybody's mind when they made her a runner, that is like a very important movement right now for young girls' self-esteem?
I don't know if that was overtly drawn, but the idea of making her a runner, making her an athlete, was directly connected to the idea that this was not a shrinking violet, that this is a character who has a strong sense of self, who is proud of herself and feels, you know, highly self-actualized.
And I love the fact that after she's bitten by a wolf while she's out for a run in the woods, her abilities change. And by making her a runner, you give her a specific, making her a runner, you give her these specific abilities that will have far-reaching outcomes if they're affected in either way. You know, she really needs to be a fast runner to get into college, which she really wants to do. So if her abilities are affected, it will affect her future. And I thought that was a really great way of having her be very invested, apart from like, oh my God, I'm growing hair on my arms, you know? So I wonder if you can talk about developing Nessa's character and putting all of this importance into what happens to her when she is bitten.
Well, Nessa's character is, it was hard for me to get away from writing her as a little bit underconfident. And that was definitely where I was going, because I was thinking, okay, she's underconfident in the beginning, and then after she begins to transform, she gains power and confidence.
Right.
And the team at ChooseCo pointed out that they wanted her to be, the number one adjective for her was fierce from the beginning. And she is fierce. She's a high school student, so she's not toppling corporations or she has the limitations of her circumstances, but she is, she's doing something that a lot of kids who are on their own to some extent in figuring out their future, she's taking a stance there, and that's a really big gesture on the part of someone who doesn't have, she's a single parent. Her mom's not making a lot of money. She's working as a vet tech. She has two younger siblings, one of whom is on some place in the autism spectrum. She helps take care of him. She works at the vet's, cleaning cages. She, is studying the best she can, and she's sort of seeing that the only person who is going to help her get out of this town is herself. And she schedules the meeting. She's like in the guidance counselor's office on the first day of school, and he's kind of surprised to see her there because, usually you have to bring the juniors in kicking and screaming.
Yeah.
And so I think that kind of fierceness, the other elements of her character that came out is she's really quite down to earth. Her best friend is this character named Bree, who was just so much fun to write. And I think we all fell in love with Bree as she started to jump off the page.
Yeah.
She's silly. She loves boys. She's, her mantra is kind of like, take it easy, Nessa, and she makes everything into a game and everything into a, when Bree is driving you in the car, you're singing along to the radio, you're laughing at ridiculous, silly stuff. You're being a high school student in all the best ways. And Nessa sort of lightens up with Bree, and some of her best moments in the book are when she gets to let go of this pressure that she puts on herself. And the other place where she gets to let go of the pressure is when she's running, and also when she's running as a wolf, because mm-hmm. one of the things that you learn as you begin to study wolf behavior is that, well, they're not necessarily sprinting. They're almost always moving, and they're just constantly on patrol, you know, circling the limits of their territory, marking things, just like just scouting around. And there's kind of a calculation. I don't know if wolves are making this overtly, I kind of think not, but you can sort of, people who study wolves talk about, like, you know, expending of calories versus taking in of calories. And, you know, they have to be careful about how much energy they put out in finding food for themselves, because they might not necessarily make it back. A wolf's life is pretty hard. But so I kind of wanted Nessa to have that movement that she experiences as a runner easily translate into her, the movement of being a wolf.
Okay.
Where she's kind of like, she's moving in a different way, in a more instinctual way, and a more less, she's thinking less. She can't think in the same way when she's a wolf. So she's not constantly making calculations and thinking about where, you know, what she needs to do to get into college or make the, you know, make the next thing happen that she needs to make happen in her life. And I wanted her to have that power. I'm not sure if that really answers your question.
No, that was all very interesting.
I kind of digress.
No, it's great. And I kind of asked a sort of vague question. So when it comes to developing a character, it can go in so many different directions. I am curious, though, are you an athlete, and did you have to research running? And also, did you do a lot of research on wolves and wolf behavior? And there were so many things that maybe you would have had to look into in this book.
Well, it's in I loved writing the running parts. As an adult, I never really was much of a runner until I had a baby. And then suddenly running became really fun because you could bring your child with you in a jogging stroller and actually get some exercise. And when I was in high school, I went to a school where you were required to play a sport all three seasons. Mm-hmm. And one of the sports, but you could play sort of non-competitive sports. And so I played winter jogging with my seven best friends, and we would jog to the local, you know, mini mart and get donuts and on the curb and eat them. And then we would wait till the appropriate interval had elapsed and jog back. And some of my friends were really intense athletes, but that was their, no one had a winter sport. So that's what we did. And that was kind of my attitude toward running until it became more fun when I was older and I had more kind of mental focus for it. And I guess in the last, 10 years, I've really done a lot of running. I've run in, five or six half marathons, and I've run this off this sort of cross-country course that's like 10 miles up a mountain and down a mountain and back up a mountain in the Catskills. And
those
experiences of training for those races and, because when you run a race, you're running it, but you're training by running the distance, for 6 weeks before. You're running, multiple times a week. You're running like 10 miles. And where I live in Brooklyn, I run all the way into Manhattan and up the West Side and across to the Williamsburg Bridge and through the historic neighborhood. It's like you cover a lot of ground and you do a lot of thinking. And I've loved my long runs, and I've loved the experience of getting faster and getting stronger and kind of moving up in the race starts. At first you start with other people who are expecting to run the same pace as you. And, when I first started running races, I'd be next to people who weren't even wearing like running shoes and moving up slowly over time, and eventually you stop running with like only women, but then there's more men and women. At my peak of my speed, I was, beating a lot of men, and that always felt like, that's not the most charitable thing to say, but I was, I felt like I could bring that to Nessa's experience of running.
Yeah.
I wasn't running like as fast as Nessa or even close to it.
Right.
My best speeds were, I wouldn't have even made the team, but that's what writers do. They run
exactly.
slowly and then write write the story of champions. You also asked about wolves.
Yeah.
And I will say that I did a lot of research on wolves. But again, it was an experience of extrapolating because I have had dogs almost my entire life. And I love writing and reading about dogs. I sort of feel like I've always been interested in the mystery of, like, why are dogs so great? Like, why do we love them so much?
Yeah.
Are they just really good at convincing us that they love us so that we'll feed them and take care of them? Or do they actually have those feelings? Or are they, like, supernatural beings who are, you know, here to show us the right way? You know, there's a range of attitudes people can have toward their dogs.
Yeah, there's a great book. Actually, I was able to interview the author of this book a few years ago. John Homans, who used to be the editor of New York Magazine, wrote a book called What's a Dog For? Have you ever heard of that?
I don't know. Maybe. I read something. There was somebody who came out with a book like along those lines, and there was a piece in The Atlantic, but that was in like the late 90s. So
yeah.
This must
oh,
be
no. This is
much
just,
more recent.
This is a few years ago. It was a great book. It was about the history of dogs and sort of about the relationships that dogs and humans have, and it's a good one.
The one that I read a few years ago was called A Small Furry Prayer.
Oh, wow.
And I don't have the name of the author handy, but it was about a guy who lived with his girlfriend on a Chihuahua rescue ranch in New Mexico.
Oh, wow.
And it was like, they had like 15 Chihuahuas sleeping in their bedroom at all times.
That sounds good.
And he would go running in the desert with like a pack of 15 Chihuahuas like running alongside him.
You're listening to Write the Book and an interview with the author C.D. Bell, whose new book is Ware Girl, published by the Vermont Press Choose Co. If you're enjoying the podcast, I'd love it if you would go to iTunes and rate it, or just pass along the show's information to some friends. Thanks, and keep listening. So you mentioned running in New York, and I did want to ask you, you've placed Nessa in, I assume, the fictional town of Tether, which I thought, for one thing, is just the greatest name for a town that you want to leave. and it's in Michigan, and I wondered how you chose Michigan, and did you go there to kind of like research what it's like being in the woods in Michigan, or was that just Catskills research?
I'll preface that, my answer, by saying that when I was in grad school, I have an MFA in fiction writing, and one of the classes that my program was a class on research.
Okay.
And the woman who taught the class, it was an excellent experience. She was very organized, and it wasn't the most passionate experience, but you learned a lot. And her sort of example that she held up to all of us was apparently someone who had been in our program like 20 years before, or someone she knew, or someone in the 1950s had written a book called Shakespeare's London, which was, you know, became an authority on the subject or something for a long time. And this woman had never been to London because she couldn't afford to go at the point where she was writing. And it was sort of her breakout book.
Wow.
And so she did such meticulous research that she was able to write a book that, you know, was completely true and completely accurate.
Wow.
So I've never been to Michigan, but I have spent a lot of time in places that remind me of Michigan, a little bit of upstate New York, a little bit of Ontario. Every year my family drives to this like fishing camp in Ontario about 5 hours north of Toronto. And on the way you pass through sort of Alice Munro country, which is I think has a lot to do with Michigan, mm-hmm. a lot of associations with Michigan. And I think, and I also spent a lot of time on Google Maps and Google, you know, Street View, going and looking at towns that were kind of similarly sized and near in the right area as where we were thinking Tether would be.
Right.
The Choose Co team thought of the name Tether. I do agree with you that I think it's an excellent name for the town you want to leave. And but looking at sort of the landscape, and one of the editors at Choose Co had a boyfriend who grew up in Michigan in a small town, and he spent he kind of downloaded his impressions of the town and sort of the character of the landscape, you know, woods, and then kind of fields, and it always seemed like everything was muddy, and you didn't think of it as beautiful, and no one really seemed poor because no one had any money. Mm-hmm. And while I was writing Where a Girl, I talked to some Michigan dwellers and or people who had been raised in Michigan or were still living there, and asked them sort of about their impressions. And I, you know, took every tidbit I'd ever heard about Michigan kind of came boiling to the surface. So that was sort of the amalgam of Tether.
Okay. All right. Great. Yeah. Let's see. I want to talk a little bit about the design of the book. The cover is wonderful, but also inside, some of the internal design elements are just wonderful. Like, there's this tiny little waxing and waning moon on each page near the page number, so you kind of know what the state of the moon is in this chapter. And I found myself looking at it to figure out, oh wait, where are we in the cycle? and then just like each chapter has this beautiful stark image at the beginning of the chapter, and then the cover itself is quite wonderful, of this white wolf with very vibrant eyes. So did you have any input into the design of the book, or do you have anything to say about how that came to be?
I have things to say about how it came to be. It was the cover design was I think actually mocked up by the time I started the project.
Oh,
so
wow.
I got to kind of use the cover as inspiration, and mm-hmm. that's and the cover shows like a wolf's face with human eyes.
Right.
Wolves almost always have yellow eyes, and the shape of the eyes is a more human shape. So it's startling. And when I was editing the book using the ARC this summer, I was surrounded by a lot of teenagers because I was reading it on family vacations and stuff.
Right.
And the girls that I was with, I mean, I was only with girls. It wasn't like this didn't happen to boys. They just couldn't take their eyes off the cover. It was almost like the cover was looking at them. And they kept kind of like, while they were talking to me and trying to pay attention to me, their eyes kept just moving to the cover. And when they would see the inside, the beautiful stark trees, the sort of outline of trees and the moon behind it, they were just really like, ooh, that's so pretty. And it really is pretty.
It really is.
And the moon, and it kind of also creates a kind of mood of sort of, the book is the wolf transitions are earthy. You know, the story is earthy. It's mm-hmm. not flashy. It's not about kids in beautiful, expensive cars, or it's not about supernatural phenomenon. It's not set in a sort of medieval-esque time. It is very real and very, you know, grounded in a current time and place. And I think that the font and the cover, the tagline, everyone has an animal inside, all of it was just so artfully done. I had almost nothing to do with it except saying, oh, it's great, I love it. And the woman who designed it is a Chusco. She's been with Chusco for a while. I'm just looking up her name. I know her name is Dot, but I want to give you her last name.
Okay.
She's just kind of magic with her design. Okay, well, I'm going to look it up and then I'll read it to you.
While you look it up, I'll just mention also that another great part of the book was the epigraph, which is by the author Margaret Atwood from her novel The Blind Assassin. Mm-hmm. And apparently there's a line in there mm-hmm. that says, all stories are about wolves, all worth repeating, that is, anything else is sentimental drivel. I love that.
Yes, it is true. It started with me. You start cataloging other books is sentimental drivel. the name of the designer is Dot Green.
Okay, great.
By the way. But yeah, you know, we talked a lot about that because we talked a lot about sort of fundamental story shapes as we were writing this. And we talked about the hero's journey a lot. And we talked about, we had a piece taken from the Atlantic Monthly about how, the Little Red Riding Hood story is the ultimate archetypal story. Like, you know, character, you know, is supposed to do something, does it wrong, goes into the woods, is in danger, confronts the big fat wolf, the big red wolf outsmarts him, but somehow the character manages to survive. You know, like that, I mean, that might not even be, I might be, you know, adding more in than was in this story. But the idea of when I have two children, and my daughter is my second child, and she was just obsessed with the Little Red Riding Hood story as like a 2 year old, you know, when she was both terrified of wolves and obsessed with them. You know, she loved wolves. She loved looking at wolves. We played a game where every time we saw a dog on a leash, we would say, you know, wolf or dog, because some dogs really look like wolves more than others. And I think there's something about the wolf story that is, there's something almost like a wolf is like a bad person, you know, in the, like a wolf is somehow personified for us.
Right. Yeah. I think it's the same thing in the bird world. It's crows that take that same bullet for us. You know, we look at crows as being bad and wolves as being bad. Although, I don't know, I think wolves are very interesting and they seem very smart. And
As are crows.
That's true.
And sharks. Yeah. I don't know. Sharks are smart, I believe. I don't know if they're as smart as dolphins, but.
I don't know that one. Okay, Kathleen, I want to ask you a little bit about your background. You mentioned that it sounded like this isn't your first novel, and it sounded like ChooseCo reached out to you. So how did they know to reach out to you, and what is your writing background?
ChooseCo is run by a woman named Shannon Gilligan, who I have known for a very long time. She was a friend of my dad's, and I got to know her. I'd known her as a family friend, but when I was in my 20s, before I became a writer, I was working in multimedia, which predated the internet.
Uh-huh.
And Shannon was producing interactive mystery CD-ROM. And I was working for a company that also produced CD-ROMs, and we saw each other at trade shows. And I came to know her husband Ray, who was delightful, and Shannon and I I think always wanted to write something together, and we talked about it for a month about trying a TV show pilot, and then Shannon got absorbed in starting up ChooseCo to publish the Choose Your Own Adventure titles, and I, in the meantime, was working on my own novels. And my first novel was published in 2008, and it was a ghost story for kids called Slipping. Then I followed it up a couple years later with a completely different story called Little Blog on the Prairie, about a girl who's forced by her mother to go to Frontier Family History Camp.
Okay.
And spend a summer, like, you know, wearing period dress and, like, you know, hoeing corn and, you know, cooking on a wood stove. And it's just like a nightmare for a modern child. And it was my personal fantasy as a 10-year-old Little House on the Prairie obsessive child. So I had a lot of fun with it. And it was great. And then I wrote a teen romance that came out in 2015 called I Remember You, which just sort of has like a time travel element to it.
Okay. Oh, that's great. What are you working on now?
I'm starting Were Girl Number 2, actually.
Ooh,
right.
Okay.
Now. Yeah, we met for a week in the beginning of October and sort of started. This is a planned trilogy. And so we met to talk about Number 2 and sort of got some general ideas down and started some plotting and have regrouped. We're regrouping in a week to do some research and some sort of, there's quite a bit of science in book one toward the end, and we're, you know, there'll be some science in book two, and we have to learn that science and do some research on it.
Right. Okay. Great. Yeah, I had a question about the science that we'll see if we get to it. But then I also wanted to know if you've read any books lately that you might recommend to listeners.
Oh, that's a great question. I do. I have one. And your listeners are not necessarily kids, right? So
Not necessarily, although I interview children's authors and young adult authors and all different, so yeah.
Okay, I have to recommend Annie Proulx's Barkskin, which is really a commitment to read. I think it's like 600 or 700 pages.
Oh, wow.
It's all about the deforestation of the planet, essentially. But she's, I love Annie Proulx's prose, and like I love what she selects as her subjects of her stories. I feel that there's something really true, but also hopeful and exciting about them.
Now that's so, it's interesting that her book is so long, because I remember the shipping news was a pretty slim volume, wasn't it?
Yeah. The review, after I read it, I read the review in the Times, and it sort of said that she sacrificed story for not exactly her science, but her, you know, she wanted to tell the story of deforestation. So it almost suggested that it was polemical, but they didn't find it so. I found it like really revolutionary in that, you know, as humans, we're so obsessed with our own selves and our own stories. And even when we're writing stories about, you know, dogs or, you know, creatures, they're always, the characters are always human characters put on those things. You know, our great gift is personification. But she managed to write a story that I felt like skirted on getting past that human impulse. Like, she was almost like she was, like, squeezing her eyes closed and, like, just touching it and not messing it up by trying to, you know, tie it down and make it too packaged.
Okay.
She wasn't trying to, like, make it more defined what she was doing, but you sort of feel like she's writing about our planet in a way that changes the way I feel about our planet. Like, I now look at, and it may have been that I was primed for it after having written about the woods of Weregirl and thinking woods for, you know, Netha spends a lot of time in the woods. But she makes you really feel the sort of life of the forest and what has been lost. But she does it through these two kind of narratives of two different family dynasties, you know, one of woodchoppers and one of lumber barons. And my mother read it also, and my mother's a very tricky reader. She doesn't like everything. And she also loved it. You know, we both felt like it just altered our mindset for the next 6 months.
Oh, that's great to know. I haven't read that one yet. And sometimes, you know, you need a little bit of a running start to get into a book that you know is going to be 600 pages, 700 pages. But to hear that makes me very excited, because then when you read one, you know, like The Goldfinch, and you know it's really long and you're so into it, then it makes it just a pleasure.
It absolutely is the pleasure of a long book. When you're loving it, it's like an endless banquet. You don't have to worry about it.
Exactly. All right. Well, I just have one last question for you, Kathleen, and it has to do with genre. So Weregirl is a thriller, and it's a YA book. It's also got a love story in it. It's fairly subtle, but it's got a love component in it. And anyway, I just wondered if we could finish up by maybe you're offering some advice to authors who look to combine genres in their work. I'm curious if you're mindful of genre as you write, if it's hard to combine them well, and also if there are any concerns to watch out for when you're doing that.
Well, I think that this did not feel like that much of a romance to me.
Yeah.
I felt like, but I love genre. I love reading genre. I love reading genre with lively prose. And I think often, you know, when you're reading genre, you're hitting certain genre points, and so the prose is almost secondary. But for me, I think I really want to feel like wrapped up in the prose of what I'm reading. And so, in terms of combining genres, like this was really fun for me. I mean, I've written a ghost story. I've written what I think of as a romp. I've written what I thought of as a sort of sci-fi elementy, but mostly a romance. And this, to write a thriller, to have sort of action scenes and twists and was really fun. But again, how it worked was that there was the outline, you know, which we all worked on together.
Right.
And then it was almost like, because the outline was there, I could just think in terms of character and pacing and tone and moments and details. And I wasn't necessarily worrying about, you know, the genre element of it. But it did feel like there were certain times where we would skim a little too close to slipping into another kind of genre, would pull back from that. We wanted it to be kind of like an earthy thriller,
right.
But we didn't want it to be like a kid mystery where you're, you know, or too much of a romance. We kind of pulled the romance back quite a bit.
Yeah, it is very subtle. The romance is very subtle.
Yeah. It's like you might even miss it. It's going to play a larger role in book two. We all decided that. But there's the, you know, it does have that sort of thriller components at the end. And then it's also this fantasy story, the kind of like, I'm turning into a monster genre, which was fun to play with. It was liberating to feel like you could maybe let the plot be a little bit louder than the characters.
Yeah.
Although I feel like the characters were full.
Now, how did you feel writing by outline when perhaps, I don't know how you usually write, but do you usually have an outline in your other books?
No, and I think the term that I've recently been acquainted with is I'm a panther, like, which is, I think you're flying, what is the expression? You're like flying by the seat of your pants. I don't even know why you would fly by the seat of your pants, so maybe that's wrong. But
no, it's true.
I don't like to write by outline because I feel like, you know, it's all about the discovery of moments that you wouldn't come across if you knew that you had to go here or there, but I'm converted by this experience. Like,
yeah.
I feel like, you know, the problem is coming up with an outline that you're actually going to be able to stick to.
Yeah.
I feel like I have an outline. I have something, I teach creative writing to kids, and one of my favorite things to teach them is the messy outline, because a lot of kids who don't like to write outlines, I'm like, just do a messy outline. You don't have to, there's no Roman numerals or, you know, it's just essentially a bulleted list of things you want to see happen that you don't want to forget that you want to see happen. Or you know, where you think this book is going at the end.
Right.
What the last moment is going to be.
The author, Robert Olin Butler, has a book on writing, the craft of writing, and he's got some approach that he uses where he basically he brainstorms scenes. He just sits down and writes scenes on index cards, writes just like a description of a scene over and over and over. He just writes hundreds of scenes. And then he goes through and picks out the ones that he finds most evocative. Anyway, it was really interesting. To me, it was like this way of both being able to be really kind of free, but also putting some sort of frame around what you're doing to keep yourself grounded and organized, and I thought that was cool too.
I love that. That's lovely.
Yeah, it was cool. And it's funny, I know what you mean though about the outline being, I mean, I think it could be a huge relief to work with an outline if you've ever lost your way trying to just be creative and all of a sudden it's 3 years later and you realize you've got the wrong protagonist.
Yes.
Okay. The title of the book is Weregirl, Weregirl. Everyone has an animal inside. This is a novel by C.D. Bell and published by Choose Co. And Kathleen Bell, I want to thank you very much for being on Write the Book. It was a pleasure to talk to you today.
It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
That again was a conversation with C.D. Bell. You can learn more about her work and the Vermont Press Choose Co. at cyoa.com. To some extent, change is a part of every book. The main character goes through a change, or her town goes through a change, or the situation that sets up the book changes. Perhaps these aren't all as abrupt or significant as the change that takes place when a werewolf transforms, but still. This week's Write the Book prompt is to write about a transformation. Alternatively, you can just study the piece that you're working on and decide what is changing, because that's probably something you should understand. Good luck with your work in the coming week, and please listen next week for another prompt or suggestion.
If you're interested in sharing Write the Book with out-of-town friends, let them know that archived episodes are available on iTunes and at writethebook.podbean.com as free podcasts. You can visit Write the Book on Twitter and on Facebook for updates. You can also access the podcast at my own website, shelaughswithoutus.com. If you have a guest to suggest or comments about the show or news about book-related events, please send an email to writethebook@gmail.com. And as I said earlier, if you like the show, please rate it in iTunes, write a review, like it on Facebook, and tell all your friends. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro, and you've been listening to Write the Book. Have a great week.